I'm Jason, I'm an alcoholic.
Jason.
Plan to be through before 11:30. you know, if my talk's no good, you know, we had Ray and Adina and Scott. Y'all can just throw mine out of the packet and listen to theirs, because, you know, they really explained the love of this program and what can happen for a drunk like me to get to where we are today. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has shown me, and especially recently, what you can go through anything and stay sober. And by God's grace, you can make it through the other side and hopefully be able to pass it on. You know, before, when something bad would hit me, I'd stay drunk for weeks and months. You know, and because I didn't want to feel the pain of damage that I'd caused other people. And today I can't do that. Today I've got to stay sober and walk through it with a loving sponsor and a loving program of people like y'all. You know, because today it honestly hurts me worse than hurting somebody else. And I know it may sound selfish, but that's the truth. You know, and my sobriety date's June 17th, 2003. I've got a sponsor. Everybody calls him Godfather. He's right over there at the corner. You know, and he's always close and he's always there for me. You know, I've never had anybody in my life that was always there. I had people that would come in and out of my life, but nobody ever that I could be honest with, or nobody that ever really cared. You know, and I love this man. And when I got here, I couldn't tell you that I loved another man, because I thought it might be something, you know, misconstrued. And today, you know, my thinking has changed over these 13 years to where we're all God's children, and we're all doing the best we can. And if I look at my life and I look at everybody else's life, you know, that's the best way we can do it. And I love each of y'all. You know, without you guys, I'm nothing. I was born in an alcoholic home. And I'm going to try to be as funny as Ray, but I don't think I can do it. The guy was pretty funny, you know. I mean, and he was just real deadpan, but never smiled. That was great, you know. I'm not like that. I'm kind of loud and boisterous. And y'all might have heard the joke about the scorpion and the bullfrog. He's on the beach, and, you know, a hurricane's coming, and the frog's fixing to swim out, and the scorpion said, "Let me ride on." He said, "No." He said, you can't ride with me." The bullfrog keeps on going, you know, and he's about to go. And the scorpion said, "Please, please, I won't do nothing. I'll be good." Bullfrog said, "All right, come on." So he jumped on his back. He got about a mile out, and the scorpion strikes him. He said, "Well, why'd you do that?" He said, "I don't know. That's just the kind of son of a gun I am." You know, and before I got here, that's what I was. I was a scorpion. I didn't care about you. I didn't care about anything. I didn't really care about me, you know. And when I went into rehab, you know, they said, you know, you've got to find where you're of value, and you got to love yourself. And I thought that was the hardest chore that I had to do. And accepting that I am a person, that I'm loved, and, you know, that was hard, especially forgiving myself. And guilt and shame, you know, and guilt and shame for me has been hard to overcome, because I guess this walk tells me I'm still trying to play God with that. And if I don't let God have it, then I'm in control, and then I've got to let it go. You know, but I told Irene I'd speak up, so I hope you can hear. I was born to an alcoholic father and mother, and it was chaotic, and a lot of beating, a lot of fighting. I had my first drink at 7. And it was in July. We had been mowing and working, and I had that Pabst Blue Ribbon. It was the greatest thing I ever had in my life. I remember it to this day. I remember where I was. You know, and if you ask anybody where they had their first Coke, I don't think you could get an answer. You know, but I'm going to be pretty sure there's probably 100% in here will remember their first drink, exactly where it was. But I got drunk for the first time when I was 9. A good friend of mine got killed. And, you know, back then it's like, oh, you got to go to the funeral home and see him. And I was like, no, I don't want to. Yeah, you got to. Which I still think is sick today, you know. And when I got home and I went in the refrigerator and I got some beer out of the refrigerator and I went out back and I got drunk. And I threw up. And that became the answer for a long time in my life. And I started drinking every day, but, you know, John was talking about sports. You know, I was the middle of 5, you know, and everybody knows about the middle, you know. You know, my two oldest, and I was just kind of out there by myself. I was just floating, and I remember seeing Bob Gibson pitch against Don Drysdale, and I was like, man, I loved it. I started loving baseball ever since. And I got pretty decent. Before I got here, I told you I was major league level. Today, I will tell you I'm probably junior college level. If I hadn't got kicked out of school for and losing my baseball career, you know, because you got to be in school to play. And, you know, but that was my ego. But I loved baseball because I could just go out there and be, and not have, I could just be one of, and I was pretty decent at it. And, you know, you get a little attention. When you're not getting no attention at all, a little attention is a lot, you know. And I started seeking that attention in all kinds of sick ways. Even when the police gave me attention, it was still attention. You know, when you get beat upside the head, come on, we're going to jail. You know, it's like, well, you know, and then they come and pick you up. And, you know, I got a DUI warrant. And they come and pick me up, my brother and them, with a case of beer and said, okay, we're driving tonight, but we're still going to have a party. And that's how my life was. It was a series of drunks and on the party. And Ray was talking about taking that 30 days out last night of when he went to a psychiatrist. Well, I went to a psychiatrist after I had a spending spree with my check and my wife's check. And went to Tunica, which is a casino, and I had a bad night. And so when I got back, I was like, she said, you might be bipolar. I said, you know, I may be. And, you know, so we go to the psychiatrist, yeah, you might be bipolar. I said, okay. So they gave me these pills, you take, but you can't drink. I said, oh, okay. But I didn't want to have to start over, so I was good. And I didn't for 28 days. That was on a Friday. And for 28 days, I took those pills, and I didn't drink. And that's as long as I ever went in my life without a drink. And so I went back that Friday, and he said, you know, you're getting better. I said, you know, I think I am. And we came out of there, and she said, well, let's go to Tunica. I'm like, okay. You know, so we go, and I kind of have one, kind of to slip in that first one. And she said, well, get me a glass of wine. Okay. So, you know, anytime your spouse wants to drink with you, that's always good news. So I go get her one, and it's like, well, I'll get you another one. This time it takes an hour to get back, but she's so into the slot machines, she's not recognized. So I'm getting all the free beer I can, just pouring them down. And at the end of the night, she said, you got pretty drunk on 4 beers. I was like, yeah, I did, you know, but that's the way I got out of it. And I didn't realize that, you know, until I went into and started looking back at my drinking history. You know, the best I could count was 90 days since I was 14, and I didn't have a drink or a drug. I was always inebriated. school. I mean, I just barely got out of school. I heard a speaker one time, he said, alcoholics are real intelligent. And the next guy said, yeah, but it's only us that says that. Yeah. You know, the rest of the world don't see the genius in us. You know, only when we get sober can we start showing it. But, you know, all through life, I was just trying to get attention. I was just, you had to know who I was. And even, my father ran a newspaper in town. And Scott said he worked at a newspaper. And, you know, the motto of a newspaper is, bad news is good news, because it all sells. You know, and so that was my motto in life. If you knew who I was, at least you knew who I was. And as long as I don't end up in the post office with my most wanted picture, you know, stay, you know. And I just found comfort in that. I have 3 kids. I have a beautiful wife. Kathy and Webb came up here with me this weekend. And, you know, I love them with everything I have. When I got sober, I loved one person. And that was me. I would drink. My last 5 years of drinking was dark. You know, we all know how to drink, but I got into it. I was drinking about 2 cases a day with all the other outside issues I could handle. Because if you're going to drink that much, you got to have something else to keep you awake. You know, and so I had to have all kind of help to get up, to go to sleep, to do all those kind of things. And also, I was a liar, cheat, and a thief, too. You know, I stole from my wife every day or somebody. And, you know, I was telling this story last night. When I got sober, we was at church one day, and they had given my mother's purse to me. She had forgotten it up there. And I took it home. I took it back to her. And on the way home, I started crying because I realized that's the first time I ever held her wallet without stealing from her. And I don't know if that's a sad story or if that's a good story, but I hadn't had to steal in a long time. And that's important to me, you know, because I believe if I start going back on a lot of those things, then a drink's close. And I don't want to drink today. I don't want to drink more than I want to drink. You know, those 4 months, Gene, are very important. You know, tomorrow you have 4 months in a day. And that's 4 months in 2 days. And I know it's monotonous, but it's the way that I have to live. And I think I was real lucky because I got the one day at a time real early. I was able to start living one day at a time. Now, it wasn't good, but it was it was still one day at a time. You know, whenever I get out of that one day at a time, living is horrible. It turns into me again, and when it turns into me, I lose control, and I take it back from our Father. And when our Father's not in control of my life, it goes horribly wrong. It always does. It never, for me, will it ever, ever be okay for me to take control of my life. And so my wife in 2003 in Easter, I have another horrible drunk. We have a horrible fight in a bar, and she leaves. And so I thought, well, you know, it's another fight. Well, I get home and the locks are gone. You know, I can't get in. And so this was different. I was like, well, you know, she'll get over it tomorrow, a couple of days, and she never did. And we stayed separated. And in this time, my daughter she was voted favorite, a class favorite in high school. And to tell you, I love those girls and my son with all my heart. Worst thing ever happened to me. She had her stepfather walk her out. And that really hurt my feelings. So what does a good drunk do? I went to the high school to show them how bad I was hurting. And I made a scene. And to this day, it's that's one of those things that I can't take back, but it's there, and I wish I hadn't have done it. But I do believe that every day and every bad thing or every good thing I'd ever done in my life got me to where I am today. And I believe that. You know, and it wasn't but a few months later. It was Father's Day, June 15th. And I hear that she has started seeing someone, and, you know, that hurts my ego, I think, more than my feelings. And it's on a Sunday. And also, too, with being a lonely kid, if you've ever watched, the Christmas Story, where George, you know, he didn't want to kill himself, but I always wondered, what would happen if I wasn't born? And that's the way I always live life. I always thought about suicide, or I always thought about, you know, what would it be like if I wasn't born, you know? And because there wasn't nobody saving my brother, because I never saved my brother's life like in the movie. But suicide was always a constant companion with me, you know? And if it's something bad in high school, something happened later in life, suicide would be my first thought. And I never acted on it. But this day, it was June 15th, and I'd heard she had started seeing someone. And so at 6 o'clock in the morning, I went and bought a case of beer. We always had race day. We'd watch the NASCAR races. Noon, I bought my second case. And at 5 o'clock, I bought my third case. And I wasn't sharing this day. And and there was other things that was involved in that day. But I knew that this is going to be the last day on earth for me. This is going to be the end. And so I left there, and I hugged everybody I was with. You know, when I was with my group of friends, I just said, I love you. You know, and I went on. And over the course of the next, okay, this day, okay, she's going to tell a different story. This is my perception of the story of what happened. And I had 3 cases of beer, but this is how I saw. And this is how, but I do know that I called or went by and saw everybody, my sisters, my brothers, my friends, said, I love you. And I threw my phone in the away. I cut it off, and I go about drinking. This storm's coming, and I do remember placing a bet. San Antonio's playing the Nets in basketball final, just in case I live through this day. I was gonna win this bet, you know, and I did. I bet on the Spurs, and they did win. I never collected, because I'd have to go back to a bar to get it. But I drove around that night, and I came to it's the darkest place I've ever seen in my life. And I couldn't take you back there today where it was. But I pulled a gun and pulled the trigger. And God saved my life that night. And I wish I'd have saved the bullet, you know, but but with a good alcoholic, my next thought was, shit, I can't even kill myself. You know, what am I going to do now? And I rode around a little bit longer, and I just stopped, and I cried. I said, God, please help me. And that's the first time I ever asked God for help without putting an amendment to it. Like, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you. And God started helping me that night. And I called a friend named Roger. He was my boss at work, which I was about to be fired from. Because if you're drinking like that over a course of time, your job's going to suffer. And I worked at Cooper Tire, and I tell you, they helped me. And I tell you that because they really helped me through this time. And I called Roger. And if you've ever been on the Natchez Trace, phone service on the Natchez Trace is not good at all, especially back 13 years ago. And this is where I believe God took over. The phone did not go out for an hour. So I got back to town, and I just said, God, Roger, I need help. And he's like, well, you know. So he set all that up for me. This is where it gets crazy. She said I went by the house and begged her back, which I probably did. But I went to a friend's house named Tony, and we drank all night. And Tony died of an overdose 4 years ago, you know, and Tony was a good man. And I love Tony like a brother. But I had my last drink at 1:58 the next morning on June 16th. And now this is where my alcoholism craziness was. I bought 3 cases of beer that day. And I took the last beer and I threw it away. And I said, see, I'm not alcoholic. I done drank 71, but I'm going to prove to you a good alcoholic would not leave one. And, you know, this is the greatness of the program. I'm glad I didn't drink that last beer. So the next day I go to detox. And Roger set me up to go to detox. And I go in there and I met Dr. Hines. And a lot of y'all don't know Dr. Hines, but he was one of those who did not give you a break. He cussed like Al Pacino, which instantly made me like him. He smoked, but he never bought. He would come around and get a cigarette from everybody. But he told me what I was. And for the first time in my life, I told him exactly how much I was using. Because up until that point, it's like everybody only had a couple. You know, I never had more than a couple. You know, I'd gotten into this deal when started buying, she likes wine, so I started buying the box wine. And, you know, I'd get a big stadium cup, and you'd always go around and keep it full. Well, I never had more than one. Just never got empty. You know, and it was great, too, because you could buy one and set it outside and then replace it, and she'd never know. You know, so, I mean, that's the great thought of, you know, that's some good forethought in my part, I think, which I'm really glad they came out with that box wine at that time. Today, I wasn't a wine drinker, but I love Bud Light. But I go to Dr. Hines, and I tell Dr. Hines for the first time exactly how much I was drinking, how much I was using. And to me, that's a miracle in itself, because I hid and I protected my alcoholism, but I never really knew that I did. You know, my sponsor says, you know, every time I get in trouble, I would say, okay, I'll quit drinking for a little bit. But I never believed it was drinking that was causing the problem. And drinking was causing the problem to everything. So I protected alcohol. I protected it with everything that I had. It took jobs, families, everything. You know, and on June 15th, I was sleeping in my truck, you know, and it wasn't a nice truck either. Some people call it a drunk truck. A lot of dents, you know, light bulbs out. It really didn't work well, but it got me around. It got me to the bar and back. But with Dr. Hines, he told me for the first time, he said, you're an alcoholic. And I said, well, what's that? And he explained it to me, and it's like a light bulb went off. It's like, that's what's wrong. You know, it's like, wow. You know, and it's like, it was an awakening. I had an awakening right there. When I finally found of the reason I love sports, because I love being by myself, and the reason that I loved everything and did everything was because I was alcoholic ever since I was born. I was born an alcoholic. I have no doubt in my mind I was. And so I was like, what do I do after this? Well, I'll show you, you know. And He was sending all these people everywhere. And, you know, we were talking about it earlier in the week. You know, you get in line. You know, you'd have the crazies on one side and the drunks on the other. And, you know, they'd let the crazies go first to lunch, and then you'd go first at dinner. And, you know, after about 3 days, you start feeling good, you know. My DTs are gone, and my roommate, I said, look at them crazies. And I didn't know Dr. Hines behind me. He said, you know the difference between them and you? I said, I do. He said, not a damn thing. You know, and so that took my ego totally out of it right there. Because he explained, he said, you're crazy. He said, look at your life and look at where you came from and where you are today. You're in a psych ward. You know, and from here you're going to graduate to AA. So how good is your life? And when you stop and think about it, that's how crazy it is. But at least I got a chance now. You know, so I get out of detox and I'm living with my mama, my brother. And so they throw me a party because they set me up to go into rehab on Monday. So I had Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I get out of detox, and first thing I do, there's also a guy at my favorite bar. They were opening one up in Oxford. And so he was, that Friday, he was going to send all of his good customers, rent a bus, and send it to Oxford. So I called Buck, and I told him, I said, Buck, I said, I can't go on that trip today because I'm not drinking. He said, I can tell you have not fallen off the stool this week. And I call Buck every year on my anniversary because he don't know what he did, but he took care of another part that I thought I was hiding from everybody. And I wasn't hiding from nobody. And so those two things within 5 days took a lot of the wall down for me. You know, so I couldn't fake it anymore because I wasn't faking it. And I found out what was wrong with me. And so I get out. And when I get out of detox, I don't know where to go because I have all this time. And, you know, time for a drunk, you go to a bar. Well, I couldn't go to a bar. But I remember this guy that I used to drink with, and he drank a lot too. But he wasn't drinking no more. And I go in there and I was like, you know, Mike, I just got out of detox. He said, I wondered how long it was going to be. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. And he was an attorney, and he canceled two appointments that day, and he talked to me for 3 hours. And he said, let's go to a meeting. I said, okay. You know, I didn't know where to go. He said, well, we can go to this meeting at 5:30. We can go to this one at 8. I said, well, what's the difference? He said, one's smoking and one's... I said, well, we'll go smoking one. Because I had to smoke about 100 packs of cigarettes a day. And so we went to that meeting. And, you know, that newcomers meeting is all about me. And I remember three people that was there. And Mike that took me in. And an old guy named Joe. He had like 25 years sober. And in 6 months, he blew his brains out. Because he drank again. And then Harold. Harold's still sober and he's moved to Portland. But those three people mean so much to me. You know, and Mike's still sober and Harold's still sober. But there's also one guy named I went to school with. His name was Jack. And on the way out, I was like, man, what are you doing here? He's like, well, you know, why do you go to an AA meeting? I said, okay. I said, well, how long you got? He said, 30 days. Oh, no. So it was the 30. I never believe anybody had 20 years. I was like, that's unimaginable. But this guy with 30 days, you know, I was like, wow. Because, see, this is my thought, okay? At the meeting this clubhouse went to, they play cards on Friday night. So this is how I thought they did it. If you had 10 years, you got to come and play cards. If you got 20 years, you got to come play cards and drink a couple beers after the game. And that's how I thought it worked. You know, so I was like, okay, well, I'm going try to get into that card game. So right there, I need 20 years to get into this card game. You know, and that went away real fast. But I went to that meeting at 5:30. And I know, when my brother picked me up from rehab, that's another story. So we go back, I go to a meeting that night. And then I wake up and I go to a meeting that Saturday morning. And then I do one at noon, and then I'll do one at 5:30, and then I'll do one at 8. And I did the same thing on Sunday because I didn't have nothing else to do. And they said, keep coming back. So I said, okay. So I did like 8 meetings in 3 days. Well, that Sunday night, they're going to have me a party, a going away party. And everybody comes over and grilling and drinking. Like, you want one? I was like, I don't think I do. You know, I'm going to give this a chance. And I still don't know why I didn't drink that beer. But I just knew. I believe this. If I drank that beer, I wouldn't be here today and I'd be dead. There ain't doubt in my mind. Because I wouldn't have gone to rehab that next day. Because I took that one beer. Because I never wanted one beer. I bought beer by the case. And I'd fill my cooler up. And that's how I drink beer. You know, so one wouldn't have done it for me. And so I go to Harbor House that next day and, we'll get you in, come back tomorrow. I'm like, God, they have me another party. This is the real going away party. And I'm like, but I didn't drink. Everybody came over. I said, thank y'all for coming. I went to a meeting at 5:30. I went to a meeting at 8. And I went somewhere else. I went to my mama's house and I went to sleep that night. And I know they meant well. You know, but I couldn't drink. And I still can't drink. My relationship with my brothers, it's better today. You know, I think he thinks, and everybody else, I kind of think, well, you get to AA and you get too good, or you can't drink around them, or, you know, and I tell them, I can't drink. I lost the right to drink alcohol. And I also lost a right because there's no place I'd rather be than a bar. I love the sound of a chatter in a bar, the clicking of the glasses, the laughing, the TV going on. All of that, I loved it. Today it makes me sick. It makes me want to throw up. You know, and so I just can't go to a bar. It's not because I can't, I don't want to. And to me, that's another miracle. You know, my life has been a series of miracles since the day I got sober. And even really before, you know, car wrecks and everything else. I didn't kill nobody. You know, God was watching me way before I even asked him to. And so I go to rehab and I have my ammunition set up, you know, and they're there, you know. Why are you a drunk? I said, my dad was a drunk. He said, what else? I was like, there ain't nothing else. He said, won't we look at you? Okay. So he said, I said, when I was 12, my dad got drunk and he put a shotgun in my mouth. He said, what does that matter? I said, well, that's a good reason to drink, ain't it? He said, well, did you drink at night? I said, no. He said, well, that ain't a good drinking reason then. He said, well, how old are you? I said, I'm 36. He said, well, why don't you grow the hell up? Start taking responsibility for what you are and who you are. And that's another one of those things. Pearls of wisdom that, as Adina was talking about, that stay with me. And over the course of time, you put a lot of those pearls, you get a pretty nice necklace. You know, and so I was like, so they've taken away all of my shield, and they stripped me down to nothing. And so it's me and God. That's all that's left. And so I better ask him for help, and if I don't, I'm dead. So I'm in rehab, and it's July 2nd, which me and my wife, this is our second time around. Our first anniversary was July 2nd, and she's gone on a trip. I'm locked in rehab now, so she's gone on a fun trip with her friends. You know, the divorce papers are going through and everything. And I'm sitting there that Saturday night, and I'm watching Daytona Race because you only get to watch TV one day in rehab. They're so mean to you. You know, and so the race is on, and all I can think about the whole night is her in Daytona. Her in Florida, she's partying, having fun, and I'm locked up. You know, again, it's back to me. Poor me. I got myself in this situation, but she's having fun, and I'm going to blame her. And my roommate is a guy that just got out of federal prison. He had 18 DUIs. Okay, and this guy's mad because he got a one DUI on the trace, which is federal, and they put him away. So it wasn't about the 18 DUIs, that one DUI he got on federal ground. So I get to listen to this guy complaining. And so I just leave, and I leave, and I start reading the big book. And, you know, they said once you go in, Mike told me, he said, when you get to rehab, start reading the big book from where it says Alcoholics Anonymous. And you read all the forwards, you read everything. And he said, if you get through 33 chapters, and nothing, if there's one page in there that don't fit you, walk out. I said, that's a pretty good deal. And I broke promises too, if I didn't do that. So I was like, yeah, I'll lie my way through this one too. But I started reading the book, and every page hit me. It's like the foreword was just so, and it was written in a way that just sucked me in. The writing was so beautiful. I mean, nobody writes like that anymore. And the doctor's opinion, Dr. Silkworth, just, he told me physically, when I get that phenomenon of craving, I've got to drink. And I'm like, yeah. And that's why I never wanted one. So then I read Bill's story, and then I read to the jaywalker. I'm like, okay, I don't jaywalk. You know, and so it starts at the bottom of that page, and it goes over. So I'm like, I got one paragraph to go. And if this paragraph don't have nothing about alcohol in it, I'm free to leave. So the jaywalker, he gets out of the hospital, and he out of the end of the asylum and everything else. Okay, I don't jaywalk. Next sentence, replace jaywalking with alcohol. And they had me, because that's how my life was. I was the jaywalker. Over and over again, alcohol would beat me down. I'd get back up and drink. I'd go to jail, I'd drink. I'd lose families, I'd drink. I'd have a good day, I'd drink. I'd have a bad day, I'd drink. I'd have a medium day, I would drink. And then there'd be days that I'd cause fights, so I could go drink. You know, because everybody was going to meet up over here, and I wanted to go, but I couldn't because I had to be here, so I got to cause a fight so I can leave and go get drunk, and I'll show you. And so I had all of that going on, and I read to the jaywalker, and my heart just sunk. And so I go to the room, and my 18 DUI man, he's snoring like a freight train. So I couldn't sleep. And it hit me. I got on my knees and I said, God, please, please help me. And just like that, the next thought was, I know your name. And the next thought was, I know how many hairs you have on your head. And I started crying. And I was free to open up to what God was offering me. And I've cried more in sobriety than I ever have in my life. Because, you know, my sponsor says it. I think one of the worst things that we put on our children, especially males, and I do this to my son too sometimes, you know, don't cry. You know, why are you crying? You know, and I think crying is a soul cleanser. It has been for me. And I've cried a lot since. You know, and sometimes you just need a good cry. And it's like you're free. It's kind of like rain. You know, we had rain the other night, and look how beautiful it is today. You know, and I used to hate dark days. I used to hate the cloudy days of winter. But you got to have those. You know, you're going to have I'm going to have seasons in my life where I've got to go through winter to enjoy the spring and see the beauty of all the roses and the flowers coming back to life. And that's the way our life is. You know, we're going to have downs and we're going to have ups. How do I handle the downs? And for a good alcoholic, how am I going to handle the ups? You know, because I can mess them up really good too. You know, if one's good, two is better. I promise you. You know, my problem is I don't stop at 10, you know, and I got to have more of everything else. And so my life has been a series of going, and ever since Dr. Hines told me what was wrong, and ever since I went to rehab and I got a connection with my father, then it's not been just hit the trolley on the way out of rehab and, you know, straight to the top of the mountain. You know, sobriety's hard. The hardest year of my life was that first year. It was so hard. You know, because you're trying to connect into a power you know nothing about. Okay, and I was trying to get good. And in a lot of ways, I'm still trying to get good instead of well. And I think that's dangerous for me. You know, I've got to just do the best that I can and forgive myself and relieve myself of that I am just human and I am going to make mistakes. And I've got to just accept that and move on. You know, but that first year, man, you're trying to connect to this power. What does God want me to do? You know, well, God sent me, you know, there's a wreck in front of me. Oh, I better not drive today. You know, I'm going to have a wreck. You know, and this person's here. Well, God sent this person to me. You know, how do you decipher what God's will is? You know, and I've come to the conclusion that God's will for me is not to drink. Period. That's it. Now, everything else in life, you know, if I drink, I don't have a chance. If I don't drink, then I've got a chance of whether the decision is good or bad to make it through it on the other side and hopefully connect back to that power that is greater than me and is greater than all of us, because we didn't put the sun in the sky, you know, but we get to enjoy it. And that's how sobriety's been for me. You know, it was about time to wrap up. How much more time I got, Bo? All right. Two very other important things happened to me. Well, a bunch of things, great things happened. Me and my wife, we got remarried. My son, we got our family connect unit back. But I met Creighton. I don't know if any of y'all know Creighton. I met Creighton and Morley and Milt the same weekend. Okay, you have heroes. One of my other heroes is on the front row here, Dirk. I met Dirk my first year sober in January. He was speaking, Walt was speaking, and I got sober how I would follow Walt every weekend. Every weekend I was off. I work every other weekend. I work swing shift. So every other weekend I was off, I'd follow Walt. Walt was on the tour. Speaking everywhere. And so I was going with him every weekend. You know, and my ego after a while said, you know, Walt's preparing me to take over his. You know, and you know, when my ego calmed down, that's not how it was either. Because still he's still on the circuit. And you know, I heard somebody one time say, you know, do you think that my mama wanted me to grow up to be an AA speaker? And, you know, when I thought about it, that craziness in my ego went away on that point. You know, and so what happened was I fell in love with Walt Walton. That man showed me how to live life. He's got a new lady with him. But I'm going to tell you about Neva. Neva Walton held my hand. I had nowhere to go. And I would go by there because he would be at work. And she would be there. And Neva would hold my hand. It's going to be okay. Get your ass to a meeting. I'd come by. You want some pie? No, thank you, Neva. Well, I think I'll have some. And she'd sit there and she'd eat the whole pie. And she'd say, now I know you got a cigarette. Because she couldn't buy cigarettes. Walt wouldn't let me, so we'd sneak outside and she'd have a cigarette. But I tell you what Neva did. Neva loved me. As a mother, she loved me. And Neva's just as involved in me being here as Walt. Because she held my hand and loved me until I could love myself. and how I saw Walt take care of a woman that he loved as she went through Alzheimer's was the greatest thing that I've ever been taught. He took care of this woman in a way that I can only hope and pray that I would have the grace and the strength to do. And, you know, that's the greatest. If that's how my eulogy is, it don't get no better than that. That's the top row, as far as I'm concerned. Creighton. Meet Creighton and me and Walt, I was 4 or 5 years sober, something like that. There's a men's retreat, and Walt, Milton speaking, and I'd done my 4th and 5th step, but I did it with Walt Jr., but I'd never done it with Walt. And in the course of that 10, 12, 13-hour drive, we both told our stories to each other. And the truth and the honesty that came out of that, I was free. I was totally free. And when we got to that men's retreat, I met some of the greatest guys in the world. I love Milton. Milton's one of my heroes. I was supposed to be speaking the next week, and every time I'd see Milton, Milton would say, "You gonna wear a tie?" I looked at Walt. Walt shook his head. Yeah, I said, "Okay, yeah, I am." And I bet he asked me 50 times that week, "You gonna wear a tie?" "Yeah, Milton, I got it." You know, and Milton came that night to hear me, you know. And I don't let gems like that get out of my life. I connect to them. I suck up to them because they have something to add. You know, the only people that I really liked when I was drinking, whoever was paying the tab. If I could get somebody in there that's going to buy my beer that night, I love you. You know, and then Creighton. Creighton, if you don't know Creighton, I won't tell a story, but Creighton, this part of Creighton that I connected to was, for 18 years, Creighton would write a letter home to his daughter. "I love you. Happy birthday." And she would send it back. F-U-S-O-B. He'd write her a Christmas card. "Merry Christmas." She'd write it back. F-U-S-O-B. See, I was having a hard time with my daughters, too. And Creighton told his story for 18 years. He sent those cards. The 19th year, she called him. And, you know, Creighton got their relationship back. And he got cancer, and his granddaughter got cancer, and they was in the same hotel rooms, in the same hospital rooms together. You know, that is AA. Okay, with my daughters, I told you, when I was drinking, my daughter was favorite. And I wasn't invited to escort her. Well, when I got sober, she got homecoming queen. And I got to escort her. And that's where this suit came from. I didn't have a suit. I bought this suit to escort her. Creighton gave me the hope and belief, if I'm persistent enough and if I stay sober, good things happen to us. If I get drunk and go back, bad things happen to me. It's not just a me disease. It's a us disease. It's a family disease. And I can't drink. And let me tell you the best part about it. I don't want to drink. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is to me. I love every one of you guys and ladies. Y'all mean the world to me. Because without you, I'm nothing. Thank you.